Welcome to Blether Together, brought to you by Farmstrong Scotland. I'm your host, Sarah Stephen, and together we'll be travelling across Scotland to chat to farmers and crofters to learn more about them, their businesses, challenges, and the positive steps they take to manage their well-being. Our thanks go to NFU Mutual Charitable Trust for supporting the podcast series and to our founding funders, Movember and the Royal Highland Agricultural Society of Scotland. What happens when you spend more time outdoors? Well, we all know it. Improved sleep patterns and mood regulation, reduced stress levels and better mental health. And no one extols the benefits of that lifestyle more than my next guest, Iona Murray. She thought she wanted to be a teacher, but after her studies decided the classroom wasn't for her. But she did use her training when she became food, farming and horticultural tutor at Dumfries House. Iona's passion for sharing the story about where our food comes from shines through. She's just launched her own wellness business, and she's also giving Blether Together a run for its money with her very own podcast, co-hosted with sheep farmer Cammy Wilson. Full of energy and positivity, despite various speed bumps along the way, Iona was a pleasure to chat with. Good morning, Iona. Thank you very much for joining Blether Together.
Hello, Sarah. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm feeling a wee bit of pressure this morning because you are a pro. You're a fellow podcaster.
Yes, a co-podcaster. I don't go solo, though.
Okay. Well, at least we'll hopefully have a good waffle together today.
Yes, of that I have no doubt.
Looking out my window this morning, I mean, rewind a week and it was snow and chaos up here. And I'm looking out my window and it's one of those perfect, crisp winter mornings, you know, something that should be on the cover of a magazine. What's your morning like down there?
My morning is exactly the same, Sarah, and it's my favourite weather. See, when it's blue skies, clear skies, but it's frosty, I absolutely love it.
Do you have a sort of routine to your day?
Yes. So I would say I'd never used to. I would sort of be somebody who would get up at the last minute. I would be in bed for as long as I possibly could before I had to get up and rush around and get to work or get to university. But now I'm an early riser. So I get up and have enough time in the morning to have my lemon and ginger water in the morning.
Oh, ditto. That's what I do. I do lemon and hot water. And I sort of think it's good for me. Is it good for us?
Yes, it's very good for us. It's very good for us. And some Celtic sea salt in there as well is really the cherry on top. And I make it into ice cubes. So then I just put the ice into the hot water in the morning. So it makes it really easy as well.
Why the salt?
Because we're depleted in electrolytes. The Celtic sea salt basically gives us those electrolytes in the morning. So it's great to add in.
Ah, every day's a school day. Interesting. Okay, so carry on routine. I'm keen to hear more.
Yes. So, and then I try to get outside for the first daylight. So getting outside in the morning is great for your circadian rhythms and your sleep. So I really try hard, although sometimes on the rainy, miserable mornings, it's a challenge. But yeah, try and get outside, even if it's just for 10 minutes out in the fresh air. You can even just stand outside, have a cup of tea. And then sometimes I'll do some yoga or Pilates. And then I will head into work. That's my usual day.
And what's got you to that point in terms of that routine? How have you sort of honed that and fine-tuned that?
So I would say, to be honest, it was probably from hitting quite close to rock bottom. During COVID, I mean, I was very, very lucky. I'm one of four children and myself and my two sisters moved back to the farm. So my family farm. And the weather was lovely. We were all together. We had company. From that side of things, I was very lucky. But I think it was just having so much time, Sarah. I put that time into my fitness and what I saw as being probably looking after my well-being. So before that, I didn't really do that much exercise. So I started running. I started doing these HIIT classes. I started calorie counting. And, you know, from the outside, I probably seemed really healthy. I lost a lot of weight. I was very, very fit. But actually, my mental well-being was shot and it was sort of a distraction from maybe facing that. And I basically became obsessed with my diet and exercise. And I then lost my menstrual cycle because obviously it was nature looking after me and saying, you know, your body's in a state of stress. It's not able to carry a child. And I was getting my steps every day. And then I got to a point where I was like, goodness, I'm not happy and I'm not healthy. So I sort of did a 360 on what health and wellness meant to me. And I slowed down. I stopped doing my running and my HIIT classes, and I focused more on yoga and Pilates and just getting outside in the fresh air. And yeah, just slowing down, bringing my body back to not being in a state of stress.
Well, I mean, first of all, thank you so much for being so honest, Iona. I think it's a story that will be familiar to many, that sort of extreme focus on weight and exercise. And sadly, very familiar for many women as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think social media has so many benefits to it and can be so helpful in so many ways. But there is also a negative side to it, and sort of the norm being just, you know, pushing yourself, pushing your body, you know, get up at 5 a.m. every day and go to the gym. And where actually maybe what's more beneficial for you is having an extra 2 hours sleep, you know, and looking after ourselves. And I think it's realizing that there's balance. It's so not about a sort of all or nothing mentality.
And what do you think it was behind those feelings? You've mentioned, you know, two words, the rock bottom. What led you there?
I think it was low self-esteem, I think, was there. I think this is another sort of misconception, is that experiencing trauma is something really, you know, it has to be a really huge incident. But actually, COVID is trauma. And I think what we went through, I really struggled with COVID. Not that I realized at the time, sorry, I don't really mean COVID, I mean lockdown, and just the stress of what was happening and the unknown. And I think to a degree, we've all experienced trauma from that. And I would say probably the loneliness as well. Like I say, initially, we were all living together at the farm, but then that was also a select number of people we were with. We weren't engaging with other friends and other family as well. So it probably no major incident, I don't think, led me to that. I think it was probably loneliness and boredom, a way to fill my time.
And it crept up on you?
Yeah, it did, Sarah, yeah, yeah.
I've been through a similar experience myself many, many years ago in my early 20s. And it was one of those things that I never thought would happen to me, Iona, and it did. And, you know, I'm very honest about it as well, if somebody asks me. And I think, you know, women often don't like to show weaknesses or their chinks. And I often think that it informs me massively now what I went through. And I wonder if it does you. I mean, you talk about your sort of routine now, and I'm sure it's given you a different perspective.
Oh, absolutely. I say that to people. And to be honest, Sarah, it's probably only recently I felt like I can open up about it. And it's probably because I was kidding myself for a long time that I was better. Whereas I feel now I really am at a place where I have healed. And I think sharing it helps. You know, like you say, there are so many, I know men as well, but especially women who suffer with this to some degree.
For me, you know, I carry it not every day, but I think it's an experience that has informed me. And I think that's something that I don't shy away from or hide. I think it's one of those things that's made me, shall I say, a better person. Yeah. And it's given me a different perspective. And I'm sure maybe has it given you a different perspective?
Absolutely. And I think if I hadn't hit that point, then I wouldn't have implemented all these things in my life that do make me happy and healthy. And also I feel like I know myself better than I've ever known myself, and it sort of forced me to face up to things and, you know, highlight things in my character. I think as well during COVID there was so much uncertainty that food and exercise was something I could control, so I could track every calorie, I could track every step, I was in control of that. When we were all in such a state of no control, that was something I could hold on to.
And I think what we have to be really mindful of is that there's no such thing as that's it, finished, it's boxed, it's completed. No. It's part of you now. And, you know, we're all still evolving, and we're not a finished product ourselves. So, you know, that's why we take it with us.
Absolutely. Yep. And I think it's not seen as a sign of weakness. It's actually strength. Face up to it and realize there's something that needs to be worked on, and taking that action. And I see it as strength.
You know, as a mother, I've had many speed bumps myself, personally, not massive ones. And I've been very lucky and privileged. But with my children, I'm trying to get them to understand, you know, they're at the stage where they're leaving school, going out in the world. And I suppose nothing's happened to them yet. They haven't met those speed bumps. And I'm trying to tell them that, you know, the people that have had the speed bumps, the people that have, you know, had these experiences are potentially the more interesting people along the way.
Yeah, I would, yep, completely agree with that. And I can only imagine as a mother, I've not had that privilege yet, but as a mother, I can imagine the amount of responsibility and pressure you must feel as well to equip them with that.
Yeah, don't get it right at all by any measure. I'm getting it wrong most days. They would tell me
yeah,
that.
Like everybody, like everyone. There's no manual for it.
I know. So, I mean, well, thank you very much for sharing that. And it's been, you know, you've been incredibly honest and open. Iona, growing up on a farm, you know, what was your childhood like? Paint a picture for us.
I had an exceptional childhood. I feel very, very lucky to have had the childhood that I did. So I am from a hill beef and sheep farm in Muirkirk, Ayrshire. So it's extensive and we've got blackface sheep and we had Charlie Cross cows. So it was my papa took on the farm and then my dad took it over. So we lived there. I've got three elder siblings. My brother's 10 years older and then my sisters are 9 and 7 years older than me. It's a wee bit out the village and got the hill and we were all outside all the time with dad.
Well, good on you. I was going to ask, you know, how involved were you? I mean, being one of four and being three girls and a boy, were you encouraged to get involved?
So I would say growing up, it was almost like taking on the farm was never really voiced as an option. And I don't know if that was a conscious thing from my dad so that there was no pressure or, you know, that we were allowed to do whatever we wanted to do and there was no pressure to sort of carry on from him.
Was that for all the four siblings, Iona?
Yeah, it was for all four of us, Sarah. And as it turns out, we're in a position where none of us will be taking on the farm. And I don't know if it was almost too far that way, you know, that it was so far no pressure that it almost never crossed our minds that that was an option.
Would you like to farm?
I would like to farm. I would like to farm. I can't imagine my life not being involved in farming. It's in me and I just can't see it not being in my life somehow. I mean, obviously during lambing and things, I still will always take the time off work to be with dad. He got rid of the cows about 12 years ago now, just because it was too much for him. So we're down to just our sheep now.
It's a tricky balance for parents, isn't it? When, you know, they have a farm and how they manage the succession.
Absolutely. And I think it's such a cause of stress and also family disputes. You hear about all these cases. It's a real tricky one.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so obviously your mum and dad said, right, be off with you, go out into the world and find your fortune. So you went and you've had such an interesting path to where you are now. Just a little bit about what you did post-school.
Yes, so I didn't really know what I wanted. At that time, I knew I loved working with children. Well, initially I actually got into the University of Glasgow to do physiotherapy, but what I realised was, again, it was the paediatrics I was interested in. And I thought, well, instead of risking doing a course that I'm not guaranteed to work with children, why don't I do a course that I am guaranteed to do? So I got in to do primary education. So I studied that. And there's a few factors. I think one, I didn't like being in the classroom all the time. And I also just didn't enjoy the way the education system is set up. And I know it will take so much to overhaul that. And I'm sure the government probably agree, but I just feel we're not meeting students' needs. To expect every child to be able to sit in a classroom for 6 hours a day, I just think is craziness. And I saw, you know, what we were taught at university about sort of behaviours in the classroom and how we manage them. I couldn't help but see it's the environment that is not meeting those children's needs because we're not providing the correct learning environment. We're expecting them to behave in a certain way rather than changing the learning environment and seeing them thrive. Yeah, I decided it wasn't for me.
And you're not alone, Iona. Just to go back to that, without being too political about the situation, I know a lot of fellow teachers who have gone into teaching and just found it wasn't what they wanted to do, and the whole system seemed to be sort of shutting down and breaking down, and they've exited, which is terrible for the whole education system, that these people who are trained and experienced are leaving.
Yeah, and it is so sad. And I found it because I would see these students, Sarah, who were behaving in a certain way and, you know, who would be a sort of classic, I'm putting my fingers up in inverted commas, but badly behaved. They're not badly behaved. You know, they're getting frustrated because they're shut in a room. They're being forced to sit in a seat. So those frustrations are building up. Get them outside, you know, learn in a different way, and you would see them shine, which I was actually lucky enough to see that in action when I moved on to Dumfries House. So I got a job as a tutor there.
I know, very fancy.
Yes, I know. It was great. I loved my time at Dumfries House. There were so many great experiences from that. So they've got lots of educational offerings. So I was food farming and horticulture. And, you know, you would get teachers bringing school groups. And at the beginning of the day, you know, they would be giving you the heads up and saying, right, watch out for X, Y, and Z. And you would hear them giving them a word of warning at the day, you know, if you're not behaving, well, we'll go back to school. And then you would see them, you would give them a practical job and they would shine. They would be in their element, you know, and I cannot tell you the number of times teachers would say at the end of the workshops, I cannot believe how well Jimmy did today. You know, he spends his days in the head teacher's office at school. And, you know, they would be the most engaged, the most on it. And I loved seeing that. And it gave them a purpose. You know, they then weren't marked as Jimmy the bad one who can't sit in the classroom. Jimmy was the one who was doing so well and being praised for it. And that was just so brilliant to be involved in.
When the light was shot, you know, shone on him a bit, he really responded to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's lots of Jimmys out there, aren't they? And Julies as well. What was your brief at Dumfries House then?
Initially, I covered food, farm and horticulture. So I was just taking workshops initially just for primary school students. So it would just be basically day workshops and we would focus on one element. So the sort of whole ethos of the King's Foundation, which is the charity behind Dumfries House, is about sustainability. So that's at their core. So in every sort of educational offering. So we were very much focused on locally sourced seasonal food, how to grow it, how to buy it, how to eat it. So we would do cooking workshops with them. We would harvest the vegetables from the garden and then we would cook with them. And then sort of as time went on, it was almost like we were capped at how much of an impact we could make at primary school level. And I do think it's important to start education in these things as early as possible. And that was the other thing that was really highlighted was the disconnect between children and where their food comes from. It shocked me. And it was sort of, well, how can you expect children to grow into adults who have an appreciation for food and value it if they just think it shows up at their door on a weekly basis? They've got no idea about the steps before that. And teachers as well, you know, we would go to the farm. I remember once a teacher asking me how we got milk from the male cow. And I thought, oh my goodness, like that. And you're educated, you know, and that's not their fault. They were from the city, they've just got no rural connection. But you thought of how do you then expect these children to appreciate it and to know the importance of eating healthy, nutritious foods?
Yes, it's fundamental gaps that exist at the moment, isn't it? Which are just too big for us to solve in this podcast. But you've obviously done incredible work at Dumfries House and it's had such a positive impact on the area, hasn't it, as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's the second biggest employer after East Ayrshire Council, which is amazing. It's just growing and growing. And then we were lucky enough to get the McRobert Trust donated a huge sum of money for us to build the McRobert Farming and Rural Skills Training Centre. So I was involved right from the get-go in sort of building and planning that. And then developing the courses. So like I say, with primary children, you're sort of capped at just how much of an impact you can make. But the idea of the McRobert Centre is to support those students who are maybe 13, 14, 15. They're at school. They're either from a farm, they want to go back to farm and they don't care about school, or those who have no farming background whatsoever. And just we could support them to learn the absolute basics of, you know, turning a sheep, putting a cow through the race, just the basics. and just trying to get sort of new entrants to get into the farming and rural sector. That's and cool. Also to educate teachers. So yeah, it was a great time.
Oh, we're incredibly enthusiastic about it. And then, of course, a new adventure lay in front of you, this podcast with the one and only Cammy Wilson, who's prolific at the moment. He's everywhere you look, there's Cammy's there. How did that podcast, fed by, you know, farmers with Cammy, come about?
So it sort of came out of nowhere, Sarah. So I knew Cammy from sort of before the sheep game days, and I knew him quite well. You know, I would see him out and about at things, but I handed him a notice at Dumfries House, and my plan was to go and do some travelling. And I tried to phone my manager to tell her I was going to hand in my notice, but I couldn't get through to her. So she said she would phone me back the following day. And it was actually that night I got a message from Cammy to say, "Are you enjoying your job?" And it was completely out of nowhere because nobody knew I was handing in my notice or anything. So he said for me to go and see him, and I went. And initially, so yeah, he was starting the Fed by Farmers podcast, and yeah, he asked if I wanted to be involved and sort of help him with running the sheep game and Fed by Farmers. So that's taken me to now.
And it's just serendipity, isn't it? You don't know what's around the corner.
Totally. And it's just putting trust out there that things will work out. And yeah, they have, and I'm really enjoying what we're doing.
Well, it's fantastic to see you both doing so well. And I think, I mean, I suppose to come back full circle to that sort of well-being that we spoke about at the beginning, and how do you manage it now? And, you know, how do you maintain well-being?
So I would say one of the biggest things, I do my meditation. Again, what I would say to people is, don't recoil at the statement medication. Don't picture that you're in a dark room with your hands on your knees and you've got some funny music playing.
Just to clear up, Iona, I think it came, I don't know if it was clear there, but it's meditation, not medication.
Yes,
meditation.
So yeah, just taking time to slow down, I would say, taking time in silence, not being on the go all the time, Sarah. I would say social connections is another big one, making the time to phone people and to speak to people. I would say also for me is losing the mindset that I have to be being busy and productive all the time. I think I was guilty of feeling if I wasn't, you know, doing something productive, I was failing, whereas actually taking time out is sometimes the best thing that you can do.
Guilt complex.
Yeah.
And I know exactly what you're thinking. And I suffer it myself when I think I haven't got anything to do, but I need to be busy because I need to, you know, keep being productive. And if I haven't got anything to do, then I'm being lazy, sort of thing.
Yeah, totally. Whereas it's actually, well, maybe just take an hour, you know, just relax and continue learning about things that you're interested in and passionate about is something that can be really good for you as well.
I'm just thinking about the farm and Mum and Dad Murray and just, you know, what's going to happen to the farm?
I don't know, Sarah. I think it will be sold at some point. Selfishly, I hope it's no time soon because I can't imagine life without it. But yeah, I would say probably it will be sold at some point.
So there's sort of the healthy attitude to succession and, you know, making sure that you had a backup and a plan B, you know, might ultimately mean that the farm leaves the family.
Yes.
We talked about that tricky balance.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, there are a lot of families who there maybe isn't a balance and, you know, it's just there is no choice. It's just they will be taking it on. Yeah. Like you say, it is maybe a balance that people do need to be mindful of.
And I've got in my notes here that, I mean, I can tell you've got a very infectious giggle and laughter. On my notes here, you've put down the importance of laughter. Then that probably comes back to the social element, isn't it? And surrounding yourself and getting out and being social.
Absolutely. It's about making sure you're protecting your own energy and surrounding yourself with people who bring you up, who match you. I think that's also an important thing. And not to feel guilty if there's maybe situations or people in your life that don't serve you, you know, and protecting yourself and surrounding yourself with people who support you and bring you up.
And you've taken the opportunity to make it into a business as well.
Yes. So I'm just very early stages of launching my own business. Yep. I'm Wellness. So it's very exciting. And it's sort of going to be focusing on finding the root cause of a lot of people's issues. And to be honest, Sarah, the biggest root cause is stress. And I think we've got to a point of treating the symptoms rather than treating the root cause. So I'm very into sort of nervous system regulation and things like that. So yeah, I'll be offering a variety of different treatments for people to try and help them as well.
Well, that's fantastic. So you've taken that sort of negative experience and turned it completely into a positive.
Yeah, I have.
Well done you. Well, I mean, thank you so much for your honesty, Iona. It's been lovely to speak to you. You've shared a huge amount, and I know there'll be a lot of listeners that will take away a huge amount from what you've said today. So thank you very much for being so heartfelt and honest with us.
Thank you so much, Sarah. And thank you for creating a space where I felt comfortable to do so as well.
Well, listen, as a fellow podcaster, I know we could have probably waffled for a lot longer.
I know, absolutely.
We hope you enjoyed today's blether and it has provided some inspiration for your own well-being. One small step can make a big impact. Find something that works for you. To read our latest stories and news, download our resources and tools, or connect with Farmstrong Scotland, visit our website, allthews.farmstrongscotland.org.uk, or follow us on social media.